What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X, and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
So excited. It's taking me back to some of the best days of my life when we were racing around the world on Amazing Race and Flight Time and Big Easy, the Globetrotters. They were like the badass guys representing the Globetrotters. Y'all are also the kindest people. Y'all are joining me and y'all are three-time Amazing Racers.
Three-time losers.
It's so hard to lose, isn't it?
Thank you for having us on. We really appreciate it. We've missed you. It's been a while since we've seen you.
I know. Isn't that the crazy thing about Amazing Race is you're in this like little bubble and this little tiny little incubator with just these people and you're racing around the world having these wild experiences. You're getting so close to all these different teams and then it's just over and everyone disperses back to life. Like I had a little bit of a letdown. It was a hard transition to go back into real life for me. Did y'all struggle with that?
Not really. I think because, you know, we continue to travel, you know, what we do for our job at the time, you know, we were both still on the team and still traveling. And, you know, we were actually reliving the Amazing Race, you know, every night, because when we go do shows and stuff, you know, people was coming because, you know, they enjoy watching us on the show. So it was cool to keep going, but I would love to do it again. Like on that point, I was like, I want to win, you know? So on that point, yes, it's a letdown from losing. I wish I could do it again.
Oh,
yeah. I think one of the things that we all experienced and we would talk about amongst former racers are the race mares. Like even on tour, sometimes I know that I would wake up, think that I'm still running a race and, you know, think that I've missed
race along, thinking
I'm I need to wake Big Easy up, but nobody else is in the room except for me. I mean, but that kind of, I think that's something that happens like a month or whatever afterwards, where you wake up and thinking that you're about to miss out on something. I think a lot of us have experienced that.
Totally. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about you guys and your upbringing, how y'all got to the Globetrotters. Herb, I was just reading some of your book, Projects, Popes, and Presidents. First off, I didn't know you were a best-selling author. Like, you just wrote this book, and it just became a national bestseller, which is amazing. But you're talking about how you grew up, the way you were raised, how that impacted you. And I just sort of want to talk to y'all about your childhoods and what led you to basketball. And I know from your book, Herb, you had a lot of overcoming, and you saw some stuff that you didn't necessarily want to be, like even like when it came to being father and a partner and all that, like you witnessed some stuff that made you go differently, but it was so important to you from the life that you had was so important to you and shaping you. And I'm sure, Nate, you have some stories too. So I just would love to hear y'all's upbringing, what led you to basketball and the Globetrotters.
Well, I mean, as you read the first chapter of the book, that initial thing that I remembered in my book is what led me to the basketball. If you read more into the book, you'll know that that person, you know, from that horrible experience was the person that led me to the opportunities that I have right now.
This was your and mom's think, boyfriend.
Yeah, yeah. And so I just feel like all the experience and obstacles that I face have actually given me opportunity to see things in a different way and not so negative at times. And I think that that's what's been one of the best things about my life, being able to see things that way and live in that way and let people know that at the end of the day, you know, things are going to be okay. I've learned to not complain about certain things because at the end of the day, I realize that there are people, especially from my travels, that have a lot more, you know, horrible things going on in their lives than myself. You know, a former Harlem Globetrotter, even growing up in the projects of Arkansas, there are people who grew up a lot worse and are growing up a lot worse than I did right now in different parts of the world.
So that first memory that you talk about in your book is your mom's boyfriend, and he's riding up on a bike, and then he just starts like beating up your mom physically, and you were like right. Four?
Yeah. Yep. I think I was about 4 years old, and you know, one of the things that that taught me is, you know, never to put my hands on a woman, because I remember, you know, those experiences happened over and over again for a short period of my life, but it just, you know, put me in a mindset to where, you know, if I got to put my hands on somebody, I have to realize that, you know, that's somebody's mother, that's somebody's daughter. And now I have a daughter now, and it even put things in more perspective that, you know, it's not right, it's not necessary, and, you know, there's other ways to work things out.
And I love that you said it was just like not the reasons why you felt like that was happening was just like it, not being educated, like you just didn't know any better, basically, right?
Right, right. I mean, it was a cycle, you know, that person, it was something that he experienced growing up. And, you know, if that's something that continues to happen and you never taught a different way, you kind of know that it's wrong, but it's hard not to react when that's what you've been used to seeing for a large portion of your life. Not to make it an excuse, but there's a lot of opportunity and a lot of research out there now for us as men and women to realize that there are other things that we can do besides become physically violent with one another.
I love that. But he also led you to basketball because he was an incredible basketball player. So that's how you learned how to play basketball and like got into it, right?
That's right. He led me to the game of basketball, and I've had conversations with him even in the last year. You know, I still, you know, reach out and try to support him the best way that he can, because at the end of the day, I don't think that he was a horrible person. He just didn't have the education that I have or the experiences I was able to have in order that I can see things in a different light.
I totally agree. And so is that what led you to write your book? You said it was finally time for you to write your story. You retired from the Globetrotters, which, Nate, you still are going strong. You're not retired. You're still rocking and rolling. Uh-huh. Is that you?
Yeah.
So, Herb, you retired from the Globetrotters. You've been there 18 years, and you finally said, okay, I'm going to write my life story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's basically what happened, because, I mean, probably about 5 years into my career, every time I would come home, and I'm sure Nate probably gets this as well, my homeboys, my friends, whatever, they start asking questions, and they would say, man, you should write a book. And this happened for almost 12 years. And then finally, when it was over with, I said, yeah, it's time for me to write a book. And from writing that book, what I was able to do and what I feel like I've been able to do is give back, you know, to people who've read it, what the world has given to me, is which is some amazing experiences. And that's what it's all about for me right now. It's about giving back and sharing my life stories and my life experiences so that some other people, when faced with similar situations, may know how to deal with these situations. And that's my main purpose now. Kindness is free. It doesn't cost us a dime. Give it away knowing that we'll never run out of it and just keep going.
I love that. So, Nate, tell me a little bit about you. How did you grow up? How did you get your start into basketball?
I grew up in New Orleans. I grew up in the Melfamie Projects in New Orleans in the 90s, which was tough. You know, it was a lot of stuff I've seen that I wouldn't wish anybody to see, you know. But everything I've been through and went through, it made me who I am today. It's the reason I'm as tough as I am. It's the reason nothing really fazed me. I always go hard, never make excuses. I don't give up on nothing no matter what. Just for me, basketball, still, it saved my life. It was this point blank. You know, growing up, I grew up seeing the things I've seen, all the murders and all the violence and the different things.
You witness murder sometimes?
Well, yeah, of course. You see some stuff that you don't see growing up as a kid. Yeah, you know, you did see some things, and walking to school the next day, you know, you'll see some bodies still out there, or you get caught up. You know, the basketball court got shot up, you know, when I was younger. I was like 9 years old. Me and one of my best friends, Wayne, was on the court watching the game. And some guys at another project came and shot the court up, you know, and that was just part of growing up. It was part of the neighborhood we was in. And it just made me tough. It made me like want to do better, you know, and in order to do better, you have to know better. And I understood that being taller than everybody coming up didn't mean that I was going to naturally play basketball. I had to work hard and persevere and get through those things. And, you know, I didn't get a chance to play summer ball, AAU ball. I had to go work in the summertime, you know, because, you know, if I didn't work in the summertime, I wouldn't be able to buy my school uniforms for when school started, you know, and things like that. And so I went through some stuff and, you know, it made me who I am. My father got hurt when I was in 11th grade, I think. He was a longshoreman on the river. He saved somebody, had to stop to take care of him. And wait, so instead of going straight to college,
happened? Your father got hurt, he was on a river? What happened?
I cut out, sorry.
Yeah, you said your father got hurt, he was on a river?
He was a longshoreman. Yeah, he was a longshoreman. He worked on the river. We call it at the port of New Orleans. We call it on the river down there. But yeah, he was a longshoreman. He got hurt. He saved someone as he was getting hurt, and because of that accident, he had to stop working to heal up. My mother had to stop her job to take care of my dad because he was home, and so you know I went to work. I worked at a place called Acme Oyster House. I was washing dishes and shucking oysters at 6'9". And it made me understand like even more what I wanted to do. I wanted to go to college. I wanted to get an education. And, the vehicle for me to do that was through basketball. And I think if it wasn't for that ball, you know, I probably wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be in the position that I am today.
So I love that. And I was telling Herb just a little bit before we started, like, I struggle with the brokenness of this world. Like, it's really hard for me to accept that there's so much pain and suffering in the world, especially with like young children. And you both witnessed a lot of violence as young boys, and a lot of things that you decided not to do. And you made decisions to change your life and to change your mindset and to have a different way of living. But I agree with you, Herb, how you said a lot of it is just not knowing better, being caught in this cycle. And it just crushes my soul that this cycle exists, because I agree with you. If people could just learn a different way, maybe the violence wouldn't have to be like it is, or the suffering wouldn't have to be like it is. But like, how do you deal with a broken world when you know in your heart things should be better, and that everyone has like a good spark in them? We just might not know how to be the best version of ourselves. Like, how do you not feel sad about it? Because sometimes I feel sad that there's just so much suffering going on.
I think everything starts at home. You know, I think no matter what, you know, you don't inherit anything. Everything you see at home. So whether it's, you know, being, like Herb said, being violent, you know, he wanted to break that cycle, you know, whether it's of somebody being mean, being a bully, being racist, being anything you see, it's at home. It's come from a time that they was taught that in the house. So my thing is, I try to break every cycle that I've been through, whether it was poverty, whether it be lack of education, anything that is, and everybody can do that at home. If you start there and you teach your kids a different way, then you can break the cycle. It starts with you. It starts at home. You know, we want to change the world, of course. Like Herb said, you know, you want to say kindness is free. And that engulfs a lot of things. You know, when he says that puts a dome on everything, because it is. If you're kind, that's going to eliminate a lot of stuff from the start. You know, that, and I love that. So I think it starts at home. It's tough to see certain things. It's tough to see people going through things that you saw, but you know, I understand if at home, you know, if I practice and preach to my kids education and learning how to balance a checkbook and getting your credit right, there's small little things like that we didn't get the opportunity coming up. It could change the world. But I think everything starts at home, whether it's teaching them good things or bad things. It always starts at home. You could think about anything that happened in your life and how you look at other people and things around you, and your parents had an influence on that. And so as parents, we got to make sure we're saying the right things, doing the right things, and having a positive influence on your kids.
Caroline, I totally agree with what Nate says. I mean, it definitely starts at home. But a lot of what I feel like we're dealing with now, issue that we have, is that we're watching what's going on television. We're watching too much news, and we're getting worked up about things that we really have no control over. And we're letting that affect our homes, where that is where we should be solving and letting our people know that everything is going to be okay. I mean, for myself, I saw myself getting caught up in what was going on early in the year, but I had to shift and realize that I need to be strong for the people that I can solve for within my immediate grasp. So if we can
That's a good point, because like sometimes I get overwhelmed by the hugeness of it. You see all this stuff on the news and TV and all of this, these terrible things that are happening and all this injustice and all these things that need to change and people who are suffering and being and the wrongdoing going on. And it's like, oh my God, I feel so overwhelmed. I actually feel like I can't do anything. But then like what you're saying and what I'm really trying to grasp as well is, where can I make a difference? Where do I have an impact? Where can I actually have a grasp to reach people and focus on that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, and it's also about mental awareness. This is Mental Awareness Month, and that's one of the things that's being spoken on a lot, even in the sports industry. One of the things that I'm, you know, talking about and discussing a lot, I'm taking part in a mental awareness event just last month in Toluca Lake in Burbank, and I'm having another one on October 25th, this Sunday. It's a virtual / in-person event where we're just having people come out and meet and greet and talk about, you know, what we're dealing with, working with a few people. But mental awareness is important. And in our community growing up, and even now, it was kind of frowned upon to go out and seek help. I mean, I knew after my Globetrotter career ended after 18 years, I had to go and see a counselor to talk about the things that I was dealing with in my head. You know, I've been used to doing the same thing for 18 years, and that was no longer happening. But what I was able to realize that I'd learned so much. But yeah, go ahead.
No, but you're doing the same thing. And when you're a Globetrotter, you guys are traveling the world. You're treated like, I mean, because you are. You're this celebrity team that comes in and makes people smile and happiness. You bring all this joy to the world, and it's like a huge event everywhere y'all go. So probably to have that stop, and then all of a sudden you're just Herb. You know, I mean, you're Herb, the Globetrotter, the amazing racer, the father, the author, all of that. But the whole movement that happens with the Globetrotters everywhere you go is kind of gone. So what is that like, transitioning from being involved with this team that is so loved and so respected and has so much energy around it everywhere it goes to being on your own?
It's about recreating the experience, but recreating it in my own way. All the things that I've learned over the course of that 18 years, for example, branding. I started my own brand, Swagball. The Globetrotters started their own brand. As I mentioned to you, building a home, you know, in Florida to be able to hold retreats and teach kids as well as adults a different way of living as well as a different way of thinking. It's just about being creative. I feel like God in the universe showed me the whole world over that course of 18 years so I can give back my perspective, you know, from my actual real non-biased view of the things that I've seen. And I've seen a lot, and my experiences are all things that each one of us can build upon.
That's interesting. I'd love to hear both of y'all's perspective on this. Y'all have seen the whole world from being in the Harlem Globetrotters and then traveling the Amazing Race 3 times. So I know I did it 2 times and I went to like 20 countries. So y'all probably went to like 30 countries on the Amazing Race. Who knows? And then you've traveled everywhere with the Globetrotters. And what I thought was interesting with the Amazing Race is when we were on that show, you really got into the life of it. They didn't like, you don't go to the Amazing Race and do like touristy stuff. They put you in the middle of real life living of whatever country you're in. Like you're, one of the things we did was like, we made clothing at a clothing, like a kind of like a sweatshop. And like, you know, you're in it doing that. Another one's like building a canoe. Like you get in the middle of what's happening in that culture on the Amazing Race, which I found very enlightening to get to feel how people are living in those countries. And I feel like probably you get that insight being a Globetrotter too, because you're welcome to these countries and you get to meet people who, like your book says, presidents, popes, and all these people. You get to meet people who are decision makers for these countries and like really, I don't know, like you really get a glimpse of how life works that not many people get. And y'all have seen that on such a big global level. What have you learned from your experiences of knowing these cultures and knowing these people who run these countries and these cities, and like getting to be with all these incredible people, but then be with everyday people as well? Like, what have you taken from all of that?
Well, I learned, and you know, I'm still traveling and still going. I've learned, you know, when I got with the Globetrotters, I was coming from Hurricane Katrina. I had just lost everything in the hurricane and basically had nothing. And the first trip I went on with the Globetrotters was to India, went to Chennai, India. And, you know, it's a third world country. And there were, it looked like Hurricane Katrina was happening every day over there. But they were the nicest people. They smiled. They seemed happy. They are appreciative of being over there. And another thing I've learned from doing the Amazing Race and traveling with the Globetrotters is the less fortunate, the poorer people, the people who you don't, you know, quote unquote, seem like have a lot going on, are the most gracious and the kindest and the nicest people. You know, well, during the race, remember when we first did the Amazing Race, you can walk up to people and ask them to, hey, buy me a hamburger, or give me $2 for get this taxi. And, you know, me and Flight, we used to do tricks in the airport to get money, you know, take pictures and stuff, you know, to help us be able to get some food or something like that. And the people who was driving the taxis or standing on a corner, just on the subway, regular, hardworking, day-to-day people would offer us money and food more than the people with the suits on, driving the Maseratis and the Ferraris and the people who, you know, who technically, you know, you're on the same level as. And that made me, like, realize, like, it's really true. Never judge a book by its cover, because you walk in like, hey, like, oh, I think he's going to help us. And, you know, he or she might shun us, but this person right here who might not be as dressed as much to impress and shoes are not shining like that will be the one to say, hey, come on, let's go. I know where you need to go. And we'll run next to a rickshaw all the way through India to help us get to the next thing. And the person who was dressed lavishly and had all these things wouldn't even look at us twice. So I've learned that, you know, and once I already knew, like, everybody is a person, just nobody by what you see. You know, wait till they show you who they are, and then you judge them. You know, just because anything in life, it doesn't matter where that person comes from, what they look like. You have that conversation with them. You interact with them, and after your interaction, then you judge them. Mm. But other than that, everybody is everybody. Love is love, and just enjoy yourself. And I appreciate that. As being a Globetrotter, to get to see those things coming from New Orleans, growing up in the projects, and now I've been to over 90 countries. So it's awesome. It's amazing. It's a great experience.
What about you, Herb?
Well, for me, what I learned is that the world is not as bad as we thought it was from looking at television. And I remember my first couple of years of Globetrotting, I would tell people, don't believe everything you see on television, you know, because once you go to another country, you get different perspectives. And also, one of the things I also realized is that, you know, growing up, I was a person who was impressed with people, with their stature, what they'd accomplished, and excited to meet. But one of the things that I've learned throughout the course of life and traveling 18 years, of course, Amazing Racing, is that people are people and we're all human. And so I learned to not get overly excited about people that I meet, because the people that I met at the end of the day are human, just like me. You know, I met President Obama twice. I shook his hand and he felt just like I did. You know, I saw him take a couple jump shots. He missed just like I've missed sometimes. You know, I spun the ball on the on the Pope's finger. His hand was just as sweaty as mine was. He was human. You know, he had a mom and dad back in Argentina, just like, you know, President Obama had family that he grew up with back in Hawaii. They're human. So talk to people like they're human, and don't be, you know, over excited about people and the things that they have accomplished. Be excited about the things that they are doing to help the world.
That is so true. And Nate, you brought up a good point that sometimes the people who have the least are the most joyful and the most helpful. And sometimes those who seemingly have the most materialistically are not as joyful and as helpful. Why is that? Why is it when people have so little? Because I noticed that too on the Amazing Race when we went to Sri Lanka. Everyone was so nice and happy, and there was a lot of poverty, and you know, it's not a very wealthy country at all, but there's a lot of love, it felt like, in that country. What is that? Like, why do you think people who have so little are sometimes the happiest?
I think it's because what people value, you know, what you consider rich, you know, what you could consider, are you rich, and what you wealthy in what, you know? And like, for example, like me growing up in the projects in New Orleans, I wouldn't change any of that except for, you know, the violence and the murders, of course. I didn't know I was poor, you know? I didn't know I didn't have anything, you know? I was fortunate to me and my brother was the only two kids, you know, in the project to have their mother and father living in the house. So we were happy, you know, we were excited until we got to age to want different stuff and try to get different things. So we realized, okay, we are poor, but everybody around us was poor, so we didn't know. We felt like we were doing good. And I think people value different things, just like in Sri Lanka. They, you know, they probably didn't value money and material things. They value family, relationship, friends, love, you know. And so to them, now they're wealthy. You see it all the time. The people with the most money have the most problems. You know, the people who are so wealthy, they happy. And sometimes, you know, boom, you got this big old house and all this money, but you sitting in that room alone, who cares? Like, you know, I'm from New Orleans, and I grew up with this group of people who went through these things with me when we were younger. Those are my friends still to this day. I can call, text, or whatever with them to this day. And it's about, you know, those relationships and those friendships and being wealthy. Wealth, that's the wealth you need. I think that's what some people look at. And also, you can't yearn for nothing that you never had, you know? So you make the best out of the situation that you're in. So, like, of course, like, now I can be like, oh, man, I don't have this anymore, that anymore. And then you're sad. But, like, I'm happy because of the friendships. I'm happy because of everything I've done. I'm happy because of the role and the thing I'm building for my kids and the next generation. You know, like yeah, like, it's cool. Like, I used to always want to buy sneakers and stuff. Now I can get any sneaker I want, and I refuse to buy sneakers. I have the same, I wear the same pair of Vans or team issue Nikes all the time. And you couldn't get me to not have my mom try to go stand in line for those new Jordans for 2 days when I was younger. But like, I understand, like, now it's about my kids being happy. It's about my wife being happy. It's about making others happy. It's about putting smiles on other people's face. You know, like that. Like that's what's important to me, and that's what I think a lot of people figure out. You just got to figure out what makes you rich inside, what makes you wealthy, what makes you a billionaire in your heart. And once you realize what that is, you're such a happier person, and so many things don't matter. And we all have to figure out what that is, you know, how much is enough, you know, what you know, get what you need to give to live comfortable and be okay with that. But, you know, wake up every day and enjoy yourself. Just like right now with the pandemic, like, you know, I haven't been able to travel as much, but I got to coach my son's T-ball team. I would get emotional now. I was so happy to be able to coach his T-ball team. Now, it was control chaos, you know, but to be able to coach his T-ball team, I felt so fulfilled. You know, that was bigger than any truckload of gifts I can give him for Christmas or his birthday, to be able to be on the sideline and coach his T-ball game. So I'm rich and I'm wealthy in that aspect. That means more to me than $1 million, because that's something he's going to remember forever. So I think for me personally, that's what it is. It's what you consider what you happy about, what makes you rich in heart. Is that's why people without money are sometimes happier than people with money.
I totally agree. What do you think, Herb?
Well, yeah, I mean, I it's hard to follow what he just said. I agree with
that's great.
Pretty much agree with everything that he just said. But it's funny that you mentioned about, you talk about the things that we're rich in, because that's kind of what, you know, this book that I just wrote in on September 9th that came out, Cracking the Rich Code, Volume 4.
Cracking the Rich Code. Okay, speaking
right.
of
it. And my chapter in the book, there's 20 other authors, there's Kevin Harrington, Jim Britt, there's 20 other authors, but my chapter's titled The Kindest Bridge to Wealth. And it's not about how much money you have, you know, and every person that has written a chapter in that book has different variations of what rich is. And it's never really about money. You know, it's about finding your purpose. It's about finding your reason to get up and get moving every single day, which I found post-Globetrotter career. You know, early on for that first year, I didn't know what, you know, what to do. You know, I was in a whirlwind in my mind trying to figure out how to put together all the pieces of the things I had accumulated over the course of that 18 to 20 years. But once I figured it out, I found my purpose. Now, you know, I went from a person who used to sleep to 12 o'clock in the afternoon who can't wait to get up to see the sunrise. So these are the shifts that happen, you know, along the course of your life. And now, you know, I was, you know, make a good living. I'm rich in that. I'm rich in good health. You know, my kids are doing well, my family as well. So these are the things that I'm rich in, and these are the things that I value. And when you're rich in these things, the monetary things will come along.
I love that. So how did you find your purpose? Because I feel like a lot of people hit a spot like you did when you've had a very strong career, a very much of an identity career. Like being a Harlem Globetrotter is an identity career. Like when people meet you and they know you're a Harlem Globetrotter, that's exciting. People are excited mm-hmm. to talk about that. It's definitely a defining piece of who you are, but it's obviously not who you are. So what do you do when you've been in this defined career for so long and then you re-find your purpose? Because you said it took you about a year and all, like how did you find your purpose in that transition? Because I feel like a lot of people get to that place and they don't know what to do or how to move to the next chapter.
Well, a big part of it was reflecting. I mean, it was going back, being grateful, being thankful for the opportunity. You know, in the beginning, I was a little bit disappointed when it ended because I didn't know where to go. But immediately being able to reflect is like saying, oh, when I came in, I took somebody else's position. What did they go through? I was lucky enough to hold that position for 18 years, probably a few years longer than I should have. But once I left, it opened up the door for someone else to be able to come in and, you know, and sharing that opportunity. So, that's a blessing. That's a way to not be selfish and realize that you do have a purpose. All the things I learned along the course of that 18 years are now things that I'm doing because I enjoyed them. I figured out a way to do it my way. They gave me the blueprint. Now I get to make that blueprint better for me, and I get to make that blueprint better for my family and all those close to me. And once I take care of home, like Nate said, everything else will take care of itself, and it branches out like a tree.
Yeah, that's so true. It's all perspective. It's all getting right in your mind.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK. LASIK.com.
Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing Watson X Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with Watson X Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
What did you guys, what was y'all's secret to success on being such a dynamic duo on The Amazing Race? Because a lot of people go on The Amazing Race and they completely self-destruct. They tear each other apart. They hate each other. They're yelling at each other the whole time. And they can't get on the same page and work as a team. You guys were such a strong team, and y'all were such strong teammates. Y'all were so good at respecting and working together and playing off of each other's strengths. How did y'all get to that mindset? Because I feel like that is so crucial in life, to be able to operate in that way instead of in the negative way.
I think our relationship was strong beforehand. Like, you know, what we had in college, he went to school in Louisiana, Centenary. Coach Billy Kennedy was his coach. And when I went to, you know, I'm a little younger than Herb, so when I went, a lot younger than Herb. So when I went to school, when I went to school at Southeastern Louisiana, I had the same head coach. And so I knew of Herb. I used to walk in his office and I would see a Globetrotter picture of Herb behind him in his office for 2.5 years.
Man,
and
then when I have old.
And so when I got the opportunity to become a Harlem Globetrotter, the first thing happened was Herb called me and he was like, yeah, you know, I was Coach Kennedy called me, so you're gonna join the team. And we built a relationship from there. Natural, you know, and we was friends alone before the race, you know, 4 or 5 years, you know, Herb was the best man in my wedding, you know?
Aww.
So like we have a true like relationship beyond a friendship, like, you know, that's my best friend. So it was easy for us to go in there. We already know how to disagree. We know we disagree in the locker room. We know we disagree on the court. We disagree on the bus. We do. So we know like at the end of the day, you got to keep moving and it's love.
Over.
You know, it was love. It was never, you know, nothing he's saying during the race on, you know, in front of millions of people was going to be something he's trying to hurt. He's trying to help me and vice versa. No matter what he said, no matter how I felt, even if we had to stick a pin in it and talk about it when we got back to the hotel when the camera was off, but we knew we was representing and kids look up to us too also. So we would, and that's who we are naturally. Like, if you see, you know, you got flight time at Big Easy, but if you see Nate and Herb, you don't see the same thing. We don't put on the show. Anybody who knows personally, they know who we are personally. Now, you're going to get the same thing no matter what. So it was easy for us to transition to do it on TV because we just, no matter what, you got to be yourself. And I think people couldn't realize who's not authentic on the show. Like, from when I watched the show, I could tell when somebody putting on for the camera. And it had people around us who would do stuff to us. And then cameras would go off and be like, man, I hope your fans are not mad at me. Or they would apologize to us on screen to just because, you know, they don't want the fans to be mad at it. And I don't think we did that. We did everything for real. Like, I was representing my family. He was representing his family. You know, he was representing his mother. I was representing my mother. If I did anything crazy, disrespectful to her, my mother would slap me in my head, and his mother would too. So there's no way I was taking that chance and doing nothing crazy like that.
Also, I think one of the things that Nate mentioned earlier about like expectations and not, I mean, we never went into that race counting that money as if, oh, we have to win the $1 million, or when we win the $1 million, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. We went into the race to, you know, enjoy ourselves, having a good time. And if that money, you know, comes, then it would have come. Of course, we would have loved, you know, to win the money, but that's not what it's all about. Some of those teams go in there thinking we have to win, putting that added pressure on themselves. And once things don't start to go the right way, they start to think we're about to lose the money. And then they start to yell at the partner and it just trickles down. So that's one of the first things you have to realize. You have to go in expecting to enjoy the experience. And now when you get to a certain point in the race, you do click into like, we are getting close to the money, but me and him, we never went into it saying that's our money. We got to take it. That meant for whoever comes in, you know, first place at the last leg of the race. And we came close, but still no cigar. But at the end of the day, if we'd have won the first time or the second time, we wouldn't have had an opportunity to do it a third time. And I probably wouldn't have had an opportunity to play for an additional 8 years. And Nate's ugly face probably wouldn't still be running up.
True.
You brought up a really great point, Nate, and I would love to talk about this. You said y'all know how to disagree. And I feel like that's a part of life. We're not all going to get along with each other. We're not all going to see things from the same perspective. There's a million different reasons why we all have a different thought in our mind on how things should be. But learning how to disagree in a respectful way is truly a talent that I feel like many people lack. So, and sometimes I even lack it. Like, I find myself, I'm like, why did I just respond immaturely? Like, why am I not disagreeing and having conflict in a more loving way? Because just because you're disagreeing doesn't mean you want the other person to be wrong or they're an idiot. Mm-hmm. It's you disagree. So how do you guys disagree and how do you stay at a high energy level when you aren't seeing things eye to eye?
I think for me, when I was younger, my mother and father, they could not disagree correctly. It was a lot of yelling and a lot of words you shouldn't probably be saying to someone you love. And you know, I love both of my parents. My dad passed away right before we did the race the first time. And I always said, you know, when I was, as I get older, with my relationships, especially when I have kids, I'm not going to be disagreeing and arguing and fussing and fighting like that in front of my kids or in earshot. And I think in order to do that, you have to have you got to talk to your partner, your friend, whoever you have a relationship, friendship with, and have an understanding on, just talk about it. You know, with me and my wife, you know, my wife's a psychologist too. So, you know, you have conversation, you say, hey, like, this is what we want in life. This is what we want in this relationship, friendship, marriage, whatever. And you have to talk about it because you're going to disagree. It's healthy to disagree, I think. I think there's no way everybody should agree on everything. No way. Like my dad used to always say, well, if your girlfriend don't fight with you, that means she's fighting with somebody else, you know? So you need to leave her alone, you know what I mean? She's in love with somebody else. So I think you have to disagree. You have to have those things, but you have to talk about it. And whenever you have a disagreement and it goes the way that you both don't like and you feel so bad about it and you was yelling at each other or whatever you was doing, that's okay. That's a lesson. That's a lesson. You say, you know what? I feel like this is how I felt when you said this, and then he or she say whatever they say in return. Then you say, you know what? We're not going to fight. We're not going to argue like that again. We're not going to do this again. And I think for me and her, like, we chill, you know? Like, her never, you know, raise his voice or get too crazy, you know, a few situations. And I did a little bit coming from my background. I would get a little rowdy, and I think Herb helped calm me down my first couple of years on the team with that. And I think it was just a match made in heaven with us. I think it was – and we him talk. We also talked before the race. Even though we never had a drag-out, fuss-out fight argument, we still say, listen, if this happened, this is how we're going to handle it. And I think that's important. Even though we and him never had an issue, we still communicated about it. And now when it happens – you know, okay, we agree to not do it this way. And I think you do that in your house, you know?
Yeah. You kind of have a blueprint of, okay, when things get tricky or this gets hard and we're in the heat of the moment, we're going to handle it like this. Or we're going to go into it with this mindset. That's smart to prepare.
Yeah, I mean, I love that they said we learn how to disagree because, I mean, what's happening in the world? We all have to learn to disagree. Everything doesn't have to go the way that we wanted to go. And that's when, I mean, I've talked about that in my book, when you're not doing what people think that you're supposed to be doing, you're an a-hole. But when you're doing exactly what they want you to doing, oh, you're the best, you know, supposed to be doing, they think you're supposed to be doing, you're the best person in the world. But everything doesn't have to go our way. We have to be able to see things from other people's perspectives. And when you're able to actually see things from other people's perspectives, it gives you a different view and a different outlook on things, like different experiences from the way people were raised. Like, you know, Nate's background, my background, they were similar, but they were different. You know, Nate came from the projects. He had his mom and his dad. I came up in the projects. I had my mom. My dad was in Texas, but we still had some of the similar experiences. My dad was still there. It's just, I mean, so many things in life that we have to learn to realize that we have to take other people's perspectives in things, and things aren't always as comfortable as they may seem to us or as uncomfortable. And I think those are some experiences that we got from the Amazing Race, as well as traveling around the world, being able to see different perspectives, being able to see India, being able to see Sri Lanka. You know, I remember Nate's first year traveling to India and him saying, as we're looking out the window on the bus in India, he's just come from Hurricane Katrina, and saying, man, I just came from Hurricane Katrina. And it's like this every day. Like, I'll never forget that. That's one of the moments in my life on the bus in India that I'll never forget, that he could be that humble right after that experience and realize how fortunate he was at that time, being one of the most unfortunate people in America having to escape from Hurricane Katrina.
That is so true. And okay, that kind of leads me to another question. Why, and gratitude, even in the worst situation, you're finding gratitude. And I feel like that is such a secret to happiness. And everyone who's truly living a happy, fulfilled life, I feel like has immense gratitude and joy. And they're basically, it sees, is able to see the good out of the bad situation. But sometimes situations are just bad and you're just mm-hmm. in the middle of it being bad. But how do you get to where you can see their gratitude? Because right now you were saying this to her, there is so much conflict in the world right now. There is so much separation and tension. And for me, it really weighs on my heart because I want everyone to be able to communicate, sort of like we're talking about. And like, why can't we all just talk? Why can't we all just see what needs to happen for the good of the whole and work together? And like, but there's so many other things at play and it's just such a big, messy world we live in. Why does it have to be bad? Like, why do we have to go through these bad suffering periods? I feel like it's just a common theme in life. Like, there's just suffering. But then, like you're saying, you can see the gratitude in your life. Like, wow, I went through Hurricane Katrina, but here's this situation that feels like even maybe worse. Like, why does all this exist? I know that's a really broad question, but like, I just can't wrap my head around it sometimes. Why we live in this world of so much pain and suffering, but then it feels like it's a part of it too. Did that make any sense? I just totally rambled in a circle.
No, I think it did. I think what you're saying is, and how I look at it is, you know, you got to crawl before you walk. You know, you got to, in order to, and the best thing about winning anything is the journey. You know, I know that sounds cliche, but yes, you know, yes, my dad got hurt. But, you know, now I know how to take care of my family for the rest of my life because of those 2 years taking the responsibility to go and wash dishes at Agony Orchard House. Yes, Hurricane Katrina hit. I lost everything. But because of Hurricane Katrina, the Globetrotters was doing a charity event in Houston for the victims of Hurricane Katrina. I was in Houston. I got to try out with the team. If I wasn't in, I would never try out with the Globetrotters if Katrina didn't happen. So boom, that's a positive from that. You know, so many things happen. Like, yes, this bad thing happened, but you got to find out the good thing. Yes, it's a pandemic. I can't travel for 6 months, and people are dying and all those bad things, which sucks so bad. I'm home. I've never been home in 20 years. This is the first time I've been home for 6 months in 20 years, you know, the Globetrotters in college. So it's like, oh, like I get to read my son's a bedtime story every night. I get to go have lunch with my wife. I get to, you know, go and play some golf, you know? Like, you have to look at the good and everything, because if not, like Herb said, like mentally, you know, you're gonna be down on yourself. It's gonna be tough. So you have to try to think, like, no matter what, something's good is gonna happen out of something bad. Like, and my life has been bad, good. Well, quote, not bad, but unfortunate, something come out of it. It gives you the lessons you need to appreciate everything you have and everything you went through to get those things. Like, you know, I wouldn't appreciate where I live and all the stuff that I have if I didn't grow up how I grew up. You know, if I grew up, you know, a different way for me personally, then, you know, having a, you know, like I was just the other day, I was sitting down and I was sitting with my sons in their playroom, you know. Their playroom is the size of the apartment I grew up in, you know? And I was just sitting in there by myself messing with PJ Masks or something, you know, I was cleaning up. And I was like, wow, like they have a playroom. Like that's awesome, you know? But if I wouldn't have went through what I went through, I wouldn't even appreciate that. If I grew up with a playroom, I wouldn't appreciate that playroom. And, you know, like if I wouldn't have been through this, if I wouldn't have been through Katrina, I wouldn't be prepared for the pandemic. I understand, like, I lost everything. So if I lose everything again, like, it's okay. I know that's this material stuff. My family's here, you know, everybody's healthy. Like, and I think it goes back to that. Like, everything is, yes, this bad stuff happening. You have to figure out and understand and take in the bad stuff. Don't overlook it. Don't act like it's not happening. That's the part of healing. Talk about it. I think the most important thing with me is being able to talk to someone about those things. Even when I said that on the bus about Katrina and being in India, that was me getting that out, talking to Herb about it. You know, like if something going on with you, you have to go speak to someone. And talking to an expert, going to a psychologist, that's important when you're feeling down, when those bad things are happening. Like you said, it's just bad. But it's been bad. It's been bad for somebody 40 years ago, 400 years ago. It's been worse for other people. You know, it's going to be bad. But what can we do to, you know, come out? Like this the other day, one of my person I met at a Globetrotter game in Denver, he's from New Orleans. His son has diagnosed with autism. His oldest son, you know, 5 years old, 11 years old now, you know, used to be the center of attention, but now he had to dedicate so much to the kid, you know, who has special needs. And I went over there and, you know, I did some tricks and everything, socially distanced, of course. And the mother, she cried when I was leaving because she was happy that we was able to do that for her son. And so even though all this bad stuff is going on, even though they're dealing with all these things with their other son, she's able to have a moment of, yes, like my son is happy. He's rich, he's wealthy in this moment to where now, like Nate came over, did this with him, and that's what that makes me happy. I can't travel. I can't go and put on these shows, but I just did this one thing with this kid right now in his backyard, and I see the reaction he's had to his mother. Like, okay, everything's going to be all right. Everything's going to be all right. Every little small thing is going to equal to a big thing of everything's going to be all right. And you have to think that way. If not, you're going to stay still, and you're going to be miserable.
That's so true. You have to think that way, or else you're going to stay still and be miserable. And I love that. And I love hearing that perspective. And I think it's so important. What are some tips that you guys do to pull yourself out of funks? Like when you're starting to feel overwhelmed and like the world feels like it's gone to hell in a handbag and there's all this shit happening. I love what you said though. You go back into your mind, what you've overcome and how it went from overcoming to a blessing. But it's all about the mindset and it's all about the way you move through those situations. What are some tricks and tips that you do when you are in the middle of the overcoming, when it's not good, when things are bad, when it feels like it's falling apart? What do you do in your mind? Like, how do you get right in your mind?
Well, for me, Caroline, I'll jump in on this. One of the things that I do is, and it may seem a little bit weird, I reflect back to when I was a kid, you know, when I'm like 5, 6 years old and there was not really anything that I had to worry about. I go back to that creative space of mind to where I used to dream, you know, and envision what the world would look like when I am, you know, at this point of my life. And, you know, Nate talked about the pandemic. Through the pandemic, a few of the things I've started to do is meditate. I meditate every day now, at least 15 to 30 minutes. I walk. You know, I walk every day, but that gives me time to clear my head and I turn off the TV. I give myself again 5 minutes of what's happening in the world. And then I cut it off and I start solving for the things that I can solve for right there, immediate, you know, within my grasp. So, I mean, for me, those are some of the tricks. We have to be able to go back and reflect and clear our head and remember when we didn't have so much to worry about. And we also have to remember the feeling that we have when we're not worried. And we have to realize that feeling that we're having of anxiety is going to go away. You know, it's going to go away. For as painful as it may be in that moment, it's eventually going to go away. So you have to change that mindset, you know, in your mind as well. Those are a couple of tricks that I use: meditation, reading, walking, exercising,
visualizing your younger self.
Yes. And I talk to people who make me laugh. I watch comedy. You know, I have an aunt in Arkansas. I try to contact her every day because I know that she's going to bring me joy in some kind of, you know, way when I'm down. So reach out to the people who bring you joy, you know, help the people who are, you know, down, but at the same time, try to be around people who are like-minded like you and searching for the same joy and happiness that you're searching for.
Love that. Do you have any tricks, Nate?
I think the similar, you know, I think this, whenever something happened that's bad or something going on and you down, and it might be tough, just remember when you got through something else, you know, that's the main thing. Like if you know, okay, like, you know, he's not going to give you more than you can handle. So if you've been through this, you've been through that, you went through this stage to get to here, like nothing is a pathway. No matter if it's, you know, relationship, whether it's death in your family, financial stuff, you know, everybody's been through something. Nobody has just been perfect throughout. So just go and dig into that and talk to your friends, talk to your family. Give yourself a break. And what we like to do, me and my family, me and my wife, we like to go on hikes. And I live in Colorado. So, you know, we go up to Boulder, you know, we will walk in the mountains with the kids, and you just break away from the technology and everything. You just being yourself. And for me, I like to, you know, sit and just talk to my wife and just say, hey, like, this is going on. What you think about this? You know, how can you help me? Even though she's a child psychologist and she might think I'm a child sometime too. So it's might be easy for her to diagnose me too.
Good job. Yeah. We love to hear boys in the house.
I lean on her and just try to just be appreciative of stuff. When things are going good, like he said, when things are going good, you got to be thankful. You got to be appreciative. Find out how you can help somebody else in that moment, you know? And when things are going bad, you know, think back to when they're doing good and just realize that it's going to come full circle. It's ups and downs. You might be, you know, might be at a downslope at that moment, but, you know, you're going to go up, you know, you're going to go up. So just always know you're going to bounce back and just realize what's important to you, you know? Like sometimes you can be down by something that's not really that important in the big picture, you know? And always put in perspective what makes you happy. Like, I know right now what makes me happy is being around my kids, you know, talking to my daughters on the phone, you know, like hanging out. Like yesterday, we just sat on the sofa all day and did nothing. That was the best thing in the world. Like, always trying to go and do something and have something planned. Sometimes you need to sit down and just, and like Herb say, take a break, meditate, and reboot, you know? And you know, because you got it. Like, so many people lean on us. Yeah, I know so many people lean on Herb. I know from the years of being with Herb and as a friend, and so many former teammates lean on him for advice and things that he do. But he has to make sure that he's healthy. He got to make sure that, you know, he's doing. Like with the pandemic, my wife said, like, who's going to be the therapy for the therapist?
Yes,
you know, like, yes. You know, who's, you know, like, the therapist helping everybody right now, but who's going to help them? So that's what you got to look at. You got to make sure you're taking care of yourself just to be unselfish and help care and help everyone, you know? So
that is such
that's what
a good
about.
Point. That's such a good
like
point.
That.
And how do you, being influential people like you both are, y'all both are so, so many people lean on you guys. So many people look to you for their joy, for their guidance. How do you not take on the weight of the world? How do you not take on every story and every heartbreak that you hear? And how do you not take it on in a negative way? How do you hear all these things, see all these things, exist with all these different people who are going through different stuff and not carry that burden? Like, how do you make it a positive?
Well, I don't think that it's not that you carry the burden. I mean, it's there's so much going on. It also, again, I think it goes back to what can you solve within right there, within your grasp. You know, it's you take a minute, you reflect on things, but you figure out a way that, you know, whatever you're sad about doesn't happen to the people that you're close to, you know? And if you're taking care of them, then they're taking care of their people. And again, it just branches out. But I mean, it's difficult. I don't think any of us ignore what's going on in the world. We have to put things in perspective, you know, because again, once you get captured into certain images or faces or parties that you see on television, these are things that can trigger things within your body that you didn't even know that could trigger you, you know. And why are you letting these things come into your home, affect your relationship with the people that you can actually solve for? So again, it just all reflects back to, you know, taking care of what you can take care of at home, and then, you know, in the community, and then branching out from there. Because if you start at home, again, like Nate says, hey, it expands.
I love that.
I think
just in love to where you can't help.
Yeah. I think, like you say, when the burden of other people, the question you ask, like how you handle it. I think when somebody come and speak to you and talk to you about an issue that they having, you might be the first person that they ever has spoken a word about what was going on to them. So in fact, like you're helping them right there. Sometimes, you know, you got something big enough on your shoulders to where you can take that, you can take that, you can take that, you can take that. And you carry that because you know it's going to help that person in a moment, in the spot that they're in that moment, it's not the same spot you're in. So you can take on that burden and talk to them and talk them through that and carry that on. And Now, whatever you talk to them about, you help them with, you use that for the next situation, the bigger burden, you know, and you can pull back on that situation that that person been through and say, you know what, I had this friend who did this, this, and that, and this how they survived that situation. And, oh, you know, or you direct them to the proper channels, you know, like, and you let them know, like, hey, like, I'm not this and that. I don't know everything. Maybe you should call this person to get this help. I don't think it's a burden when you take on other people's stuff. I do think you have to be ready and prepared, and you have to be healthy yourself, mentally healthy yourself. Like I said, make sure you know you don't take it and it don't become a bad thing.
Yes.
Make sure everything you do take on is something you can handle, and you have somebody to go put your stuff on too. You
yeah.
know, because you
yeah.
can't just keep all your stuff inside when the people are unloading on you. And I think okay. it's a blessing to be seen as the person who you can that people can unload on, and sure. they trust you, and they feel like you're positive and you're going to help them. I think that's a honor, you know.
I think
that's an honor. You take that as an honor. Like, this person is hurt. They want to. I need to call Caroline to talk about this. Like, you don't take that as like, oh man, here we go again. I got to listen to this. You take this as, you know what? They believe in me. They trust me that, you know, one of your friends might call you instead of their husband or their wife to help you, help them. Like, that's good. That means like, hey, like my parents raised a good person to that people that trust their deepest, darkest secrets with me. And they want me to help them go to the light. Like, that's not a burden. That's a blessing, you know? And
so
I think
true.
That's how you look at it.
Nate, that's so true. And I think the key thing that you said for me is, that I really registered with, is that you have to make sure that you take care of yourself so that you can be that person for someone else. Like, I can't just take everybody's stuff in and then just let it consume me and live with it. I have to figure out how to hear it, be there, support people, but then also let it go in a way where it doesn't consume me and make me not effective to be a helpful person.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good piece of advice that I am going to really internalize.
Amy's doing a good job with you, Nate.
What is it like being married to a psychologist?
We need to bring Amy on. Amy right now. Amy.
Working out. Today's our only off day. She's at the gym taking care of herself, you know? So she's doing... What she's practicing what she's preaching. She's got a cycle bar or something.
I'm gonna have to set her something.
It's good.
You guys both are very enlightened. Y'all are very wise, very it's just a mix of probably your entire lives. Y'all have seen so much and you have done so much. And on top of like just your life experiences, the mental work that you both have done, y'all are both so aware of cycles and mentality and mindset. It's really, really a blessing for me to get to talk to y'all. I mean, obviously I've loved you guys since The Amazing Race and I will be fans and adore y'all for life, but to be friends with you guys on this level and to hear how your mind works and how you guys maneuver this world and all the different situations that you both have been in, it's really inspiring. And I feel like y'all are such a blessing to this world. And I'm so lucky to know y'all. And I find it so amazing that you guys are using your lives and shining in the way that you are, truly helping so many people just by being the lights that you are. And that's really awesome.
Thank you, Caroline. We appreciate that. You know, we don't get to speak to you enough. I mean, it all goes back to self-improvement. I mean, we have to, for myself, once I retired, I began to read more. You know, I just finished reading Purpose Driven Life. I'm listening to The Four Agreements. I'm halfway through The Alchemist, which I just got the other day. So it's just giving me a different aspect. And I just sit up and think, man, I had all those times on the bus when I really didn't read and so much time that I wasted, but I guess it wasn't wasting. I was taking in and gathering things as they come. But now I get to actually reflect and figure out, you know, now that I'm actually living, because I'm living for others and not for myself.
I love that. So I have like a couple more questions and I'll wrap up because obviously you'll have other things to do in your life besides talk to me. Although I've loved this conversation so much all day. What is a moment that has marked time in your life where when you think about it, it is one of just a perfect moment? It was a moment that just was perfect and it made you feel everything you wanted to feel. What was that moment?
For me, it goes back to, I think maybe my first year with the Globetrotters. We was in Sacramento. We was doing a Make-A-Wish event with the Make-A-Wish Foundation at the Sacramento Kings Arena. And a kid, I walked up to him. His name was Michael. And he didn't say much, but me and him went by on the side by ourselves, and we shot hoops. We shot hoops. We shot hoops. We shot hoops. And at the end, he said, thank you, and he walked off. And the next day, we was flying out, and his mother walked up to me in the airport. And she was like, you know, that's my son. And, you know, he's been diagnosed with this. And that was his first time saying a word in 8 months. For 8 months, he hadn't said a word. And it's crazy. Now I think he's like 18, 19. We still keep in touch. He built his first computer at 14. And me and him, we text, we talk. And that moment right there let me know that it's bigger than anything you can do and accomplish for yourself. Life is about what you can do for others. And like, no matter what I do, no matter what I've done, and when I'm gone, nothing else matters. Not the money, not the homes, not the cars. It's what I've done for other people. So when I leave, I don't want them to say, man, he did this, he made this, he did this. I want them to tell stories about the time that they spent with me, about the time that I changed their life. And that right there with Michael in Sacramento is with me forever, because that when I realized how special the Globetrotters were and how special, you know, I am as a person, to where all I did was pick up the ball and shot with this kid, and he, you know, he hadn't spoken a word in 8 months. Wow. And now we text all the time, and he's building and he's working out and all these things. And that was a awesome moment. And that's something that, you know, I'll never forget and try to recreate naturally and organically. You know, anytime I go anywhere and talk to anyone, I understand that they can walk away with a good experience or a bad experience. And yeah. I want all the experience anybody have with me to always be good. And I think that's what I want to leave when I leave. That's when I'll leave here. Like, no matter what, anytime Caroline think about when she talked to Nate in flight time, she gonna always smile and be like, you know what? I don't care what you say, what you think, you've been through, what you've seen. I know that they're good people, and that's what it's about. That's my experience though.
Man, that's awesome. That's awesome. What about you, Herb?
I'd probably say the birth of my kids, and probably actually being there for the birth of my daughter, just in that whole entire thing happened and realizing that I had brought a new life into the world and my responsibilities were different. And again, I mean, it all goes back to, you know, dreaming as a kid of being a father someday. So some of the same advice that I'm giving, you know, my son right now at this point. And, you know, it's just really a blessing to be able to see them and know that you're living for a, you know, for a different purpose. And, you know, my purpose in the conversation that I have with them is always to ask questions. You know, I'm not always right. Your mother's always, you know, not always right. You get to ask questions and I get to learn, you know, from your experiences. But at the end of the day, you know, putting a life into this world is a great responsibility. And for me, that was the most memorable eye-opening thing that happened in my life. And I'm just excited that even in my 40s, you know, I've had a great 20 years before, but I get to show that my kids that I'm still dreaming and still creating into my 40s, something that us older people tend to forget. Sometimes we tend to go back and try to live vicariously through our kids and tell them what we used to be able to do, what we could do, but we actually need to show them what we're doing now. You know, take responsibility for what we're doing now and not stop putting so much pressure on them to live, you know, to be what we were not, because we still can become what we want to be.
I love that. I love that. You guys are amazing. Y'all are so amazing. I feel so thankful to have this bond with y'all forever from The Amazing Race. That was truly such a special time of life and such a magical memory. I wrap every podcast up with Leave Your Light. Y'all dropped so much wisdom, but what do you want people to know?
Go ahead, Herb.
I want people to know that kindness is free. Kindness is free. It doesn't cost you a dime. I'm a kindness billionaire. I have more kindness in the world than anybody, I feel. And if we can all get on that level, we can all be kindness billionaires and realize that if we give kindness away with abundance, as we should, we'll never run out of it because there's plenty of it. It doesn't cost you a dime, so give it away. A random act of kindness today, hashtag kindness is free. And let's make this world a better place because we all get to make it a better place.
I love that.
That was awesome. That's real cool. I just want everybody to know that no matter what's going on now, it's going to get greater later. Whatever you have going on in your life, don't make an excuse, you know, make a change, you know, try to be better. Don't just sit down and be still and think like, okay, it's over. You know, try to do something harder, work hard, be good, you know. I'm on Instagram now. Check me out on Instagram now.
I've been trying to get him on Instagram forever.
What's your handle? I started following you right away when Herb said, everybody follow. What are both of y'all's handles on Instagram?
I actually forgot my handles. Mine is Nate. I just got it a week ago.
Let me tell you.
It's real estate Nate or something. DA Trotter 4, the number 4, at DA Trotter.
Nate has four. The longest Instagram handle of anyone in the history of the world. It is at nate.bigeasy.lofton, LOFTON, _ realtor. I mean, that's a big one. That's a long one there.
Type in Big Easy.
Only one.
Flight Times is at Da Trotter, DATROTTER 4.
Yeah. Come see me. If you're in Colorado, you need a house. You know, I'm a realtor too. Training kids. I might start selling gumbo too. Whatever y'all need, we can do it. Come on, holler at your boy.
Also, motivational speaking, you can hire me, or you can hire me and Nate together. You can get 2 for 1.
Oh my god,
let's do it. Hey, we doing everything.
Hey, Caroline, big shout out to Amazing Race Season 32 coming up right now. We have to show this love because if it were not for them, we wouldn't be talking. As well as the whole Harlem Globetrotters, you know, they're not right now, but I know they're getting ready to try to crank things back up as soon as they get back, you know, as soon as they get the okay. So we have to give a shout out to the people who are part of the reason why we're here.
That's right.
Amen. Yep. Go get your Big Easy jersey or any other Globetrotter jersey for Halloween. You can't look this good, but you could come close.
They can put some makeup on you and make you look like that. And you'll scare a lot of people.
You're starting a whole nother thing. It's a different thing.
Just give the people what they want. This is what the people really want. They want to hear me talk about you.
Caroline, you tell Bobby Bones, though, man, my wife, you know, she's a big fan. As I say, she is a psychologist. And on her drive to school, she worked 10-hour shifts for a week. To the hospital. She always, you know, that's what she says she listens to. She loves Bobby Bones. That gets her happy, and she gets to smile before she walk in and do what she do. So you make sure to tell her.
I'm sad that you weren't on the call because Herb is going to be on the show with me.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe
he was
going to leave.
Hey, he was texting me. I said, dude, hold on. We talking to Bobby Bones. Chill out.
I think when I looked at when Herb forwarded me the email for the link, y'all missed the T in my name for the email. The email was on there wrong, so I didn't get the email. I saw it in the one Herb forwarded me. But it's all good. I could get on there with him another time. Tell him, hit me up. Yeah, happy wife, happy life.
That's so true. I'll let him know that if he ever wants to talk to two of the most famous Globetrotters, you're right here. Hello.
You got the ugly one and the best looking one ever.
Well, you know who that is.
You got me on that one.
Oh, you guys, I love y'all so much. I really
love you too, Caroline.
Feel blessed to have y'all as friends, forever friends. When you have a moment like Amazing Race, it like makes you friends for a lifetime. And I admire you both. I respect you both. And I am grateful to know y'all and follow your journeys. And thank you so much for coming on my podcast and dropping all of this wisdom. Oh, my gosh.
Thanks for having us. We appreciate it. You know that.
Shout out to you and your family. Hope all is well.
Okay. Yep. Thank you. And let's try to get a reunion one day. I'm not going to say like any
Let's do it.
Time, but let's do it.
We should. I'm with it. Let's do it. I would love it.
Okay. I'm with it.
Okay. Love you guys. Y'all have a great day.
I love you
day.
Too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.